John, Mr. John, how are you doing, my friend?
Good. How are you? 4 months in.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah. We'll certainly talk about that. It's good to finally link up. Been following you for a long time. You do a great job on social media. It's nice to finally connect.
Yeah. You too. It's a small group that I feel like we're in, you know, incorporated with, but also it's just ever growing with like the good people that are on online as well as the you know, intermixed with the bad, the dangerous.
That is an optimistic point of view that we will take on for today, and just a general optimistic aura to the podcast, which we'll try and keep throughout. Tell me about you. Let's do the classic pod intro stuff. Selfishly, I want to learn a little bit more about you, but let's do the, you know, who's John, how do you get into fitness, and what do you do now?
Yeah, so I had kind of had an interesting start. I mean, at this point, you know, just to be very upfront and basic, like my full-time job is one-on-one coaching, nutrition, and training, but I got here in a really roundabout way. So I actually went to school for a very mathematical, analytical degree, and I was on the trajectory to be an actuarial analyst, if you know what that is. Most people don't. The only time you might have seen it is in an older movie now at this point. Along came Polly, I believe. Ben Stiller was an actuary. Essentially, they set premiums for insurances, predict when you're going to die, a lot of modeling statistics and things like that. So math, data, numbers, and really good at that, was successful with that. I just hated the lifestyle, like day to day, being behind a computer desk, crunching numbers in Excel for 12, 15 hours a day. And kind of just like, I'm done with this. So I kind of just sporadically quit. And my game plan after that was I didn't have one. So serving beer, pouring beer, bartending, and things like that, while also then getting certified as a personal trainer. And from there, building up in-person experience training people on the gym floor. And then the pandemic was kind of the catalyst for transitioning fully online. But that was just like the nature of the industry, I think, at the time as well. So since then, just kind of going through the typical progression of, you know, getting more educated, more experienced. At this point now, I'm like a pre and postnatal certified coach, certified health mindset coach, you know, weight management specialist, all the things that you want to put behind your name. I've got a good deal of them. But yeah, at this point now, full-time at home, one-on-one coach, and also full-time dad at home as well.
I haven't heard one thing you said since you said Along Came Polly. It's like absolute all-time class, just a classic Philip Seymour Hoffman, like not cameo, but he's like a, not the main character, but he's like a, wow, what is the supporting cast? Philip Seymour Hoffman in that movie's absolutely out of control.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I feel like if that one isn't all that popular and just kind of like the general mainstream, that I throw that out there, people are like, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it absolutely should be. It definitely should be. But kids, that is like, it's our job to teach our kids about these movies, because they will die out without us. I think that's the take home message from today for sure.
Well, just a random question for you there. Like, if you wanted to put that movie on today, what would you do and how would you find it? How would you play it? I'm pretty sure I had it on a DVD, I believe, at some point, but I don't have a DVD player now. I couldn't play it. And I don't own it on any streaming services or anything.
If you just
like that.
Go to Roku, I just use Roku in my house. If you type in Along Came Polly, it'll find it for you. I'm sure that there's like one streaming platform that's like gobbling up all these like early 2000s comedies that just has it baked in. I mean, even if you just like Google it, and if you wanted to play it, I'm sure. I mean, you could find it on YouTube, apparently. You can buy it on YouTube TV.
I think it's just such a weird kind of
YouTube TV is already.
I gotta go find it. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Totally. Yes, you absolutely have to go find it. Absolutely have to go find it. Yeah, absolutely classic. But yeah, okay, cool. Right. What you do now, probably more fun than the way Ben Stiller was depicting his job in that movie, would you say?
Oh, yeah. Now, and I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still data crunching, so to speak, and I still sit behind a computer when I'm working. But yeah, there's now much more of a relationship component, whereas my intimacy with wasn't with people, it was with Excel, basically, you know what I mean, and predictive modeling software. So yeah, I love working with people more so than numbers alone.
Yep. All of my friends in college, basically every single one of them became an accountant. They do different things now, but they all are in accounting. So like Excel spreadsheet wizards across the board. Anytime I need something done, I'm like, can you hop in and help me with this like stupid formula or something? But yeah.
You
have some of those skills still. Do you feel like, yeah, I use some of that stuff?
No, I would say maybe a couple of years ago, but
Nice.
since, even with coaching, I've transitioned away. Like, I don't even program the training in Excel anymore. So, like, I
Yep.
don't use it often. And I think things continue to update. And I'm like, yeah, I'd be very slow at it for sure.
Tell me about you need to you must correct me if I'm wrong, but you work with Level 10 Coaching.
Correct. I'm
How
the head assistant coach at
how did
Level
that
10 Coaching.
happen? What's that like? Enjoying that, 'cause I think it's different than me, but it's slightly different than most people who are like a solopreneur by themselves. You are and aren't. And so talk a little bit about how you got in with Joelle and all that stuff and what that's like.
Yeah, it is. I think I got really lucky, to be honest with you, in terms of timing and falling into that, because I didn't have to make the leap to just say, like, I'm doing this completely on my own. Even though I was from, like, in my in-person training business, for some reason, that brick and mortar is a little bit more, but there's a little bit more, confidence and kind of like the ability to do it, where online it's so, like, abstract. Like, you can literally make anything out of nothing and start charging for it, essentially. So that's basically what kind of like an online service for coaching is. It's an abstract concept, essentially. And I was seeing the industry move that way, and there was a need for it because of the pandemic, right? 2020, gym shut down. I couldn't work. And that's when, just luckily for me, Joelle had been expanding from just her doing her own solo coaching to, man, there's a demand for this. I need more coaches. And I just applied and ended up, being hired on very, very early around the right after March, like when things shut down. So ever since then, I have been working under her. And over the last 2 years, I've since moved into like a more of a managerial-esque role, where I'm the head assistant coach. So new coaches that come under us, I do some of the training and things like that. So there's some additional responsibility there. But yeah, I really like the whole, I still get to coach. Like, that is my main job. I work one-on-one with clients. I have a full roster. But also, and I'm sure you can appreciate this because you have to do this on your own, like, I don't have to do all of the back end, financial things, the billing, the payroll, none of that. You know what I mean? It's kind of handled legal stuff. And to me, that's where I'm like, it's kind of like I have a normal job, but also not.
Do you, it's kind of leading, and I suspect I know the answer, but do you enjoy, I guess I'll ask which you enjoy more, but I'm not trying to like pick on either of these things, but which do you enjoy more? Maybe speak a little bit to coaching people one-on-one directly, helping end user get healthier, and also coaching coaches, because I think that those are two different parts that I feel like ultimately end up with the same benefit, right? Helping other people to then ultimately help other people, and making better coaches is like a little bit of ultimately can do a really great job helping even more people. So you feel that that's like two different pursuits that ultimately are both really enjoyable.
I do, and I would say that coaching, like the general population within their health and fitness, like my actual clients, I feel like that comes more naturally to me, because I've always been a person who can kind of just adapt to whatever social situation that I'm in and take on like whatever persona or role I need to. And so I think that's one of my strong suits. With if I have clients who want or need tough love versus more nurturing, things like that, I can pick up on those cues and do it without having to necessarily think about it. But that's kind of an innate skill that can be learned, and that's part of like the process that I go through with helping, other coaches do that, and kind of like guiding the other coaches on my team as well. But to me, that's an actual challenge to teach that, more so than it is just to do it. So from an enjoyment standpoint, I think I like working with clients better, because it's just smooth and easy to me. It's almost like I don't even have to think about it, versus I have to, like, how did I do that? And how can I put that in a way that somebody else can understand? Like, oh, I can do that for people as well. If that makes sense.
No, totally. So I had a, not to be, everyone who's listening to this podcast has heard my story, but I began as an in-person coach, then got really busy. A friend of mine also got really busy. We thought the natural progression was to start our own gym. And we're like, oh, we'll start our own gym, because that's what you do when you have a full roster of clients. And not only did we have a full roster of clients, we had subcontractors, similar like coaches under us or whatever, that we would give our overflow to. We're like, great, let's take all of us, let's go do our own thing. And then ultimately it was like, well, the next step is to phase yourself out of dealing with the client and get, 20 people under you and all that stuff. And that was just, it was like really caught up in this grind culture. Everybody gets that bug. There's like, if you look, I mean, if we just turn the camera, not that anybody's watching this, but there's like a million self-help books, and not just self-help. I don't mean that in a patronizing way. I just mean like those kinds of books that make you feel like scale. You got to scale.
You gotta be doing more.
Yeah. 4-hour work week, scalable this, you know? And so I got to the point where all I was doing was hiring coaches, running like an internship within our gym to like recreate ourselves. That's ironically the best coach we ever hired was my wife is that's how we met. I really liked doing that. But the reason that I ultimately went from doing that to go online is I missed working with the individual. And so I definitely feel you on that. I think I enjoy both of them, but I know for a fact I hit a wall of just coaching coaches and of really missing dealing with working with the individual.
Yeah, and I mean that brings up a concept I'm sure you still talk through with the people that you work with as well. Do you still have just a smaller subset for your own like clients that you work with on a nutritional basis as well, right? Like the biggest thing is going to be like the group program training. Or is it a balance of both?
It's definitely a balance of both. I mean, the group is more scalable, and so the group is what the group is, and I put a lot of effort into growing it. But actually, like the time split across the week, I still spend quite a bit of time with one-on-one.
Pretty even,
and, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I mean that whole whatever you just spoke through about kind of that whole like grind mentality. I feel like in this day and age, that's a very frequent conversation that I have and concept that I talk about with my clients in terms of how it can be beneficial, but it's a double-edged sword in terms of like, maybe that's what's also holding a lot of people back in their health and fitness because there's this switch that never gets shut off of like, if I'm not doing more, I'm falling behind or failing. And if we can kind of like zoom back from that, it's like, is that really the case? And so I took that approach with my career as well too, because in the actuarial field, eventually, like you get out of school and you keep taking exams and you keep getting, bumping up until you get to that fellowship or whatever you're accredited. And I was like, it's just never ending. You know what I mean? And it's never going to, every time you do something, you want the next step and it's never as fulfilling. And now I just get the fulfillment. So it's much better.
Yeah, much better. We have a little bit of an outline here just to keep us on track. Let's pop around to helping our clients because that's what we're talking about here. Let's talk a little bit about, I'll say it and then we'll add some context, which is what's standing in your client's way from them achieving their goals. And there's many things, but when we talk about that,
we could get into a ton here.
What are some things that jump to mind?
So the biggest one to me, I think, and this is going to fall under the general larger bucket category of like mindset and perspective, but I think it's the inability to acknowledge that there's already success occurring and that goals are already being achieved and accomplished. And that's kind of what, I was just getting to in terms of like that switch that hasn't been shut off in terms of like, I need to be doing more or else I'm failing. Whereas the success is already coming. We just need to be able to see that it's happening, just not at the rates or the magnitude that may be expected due to whatever variety of factors. Most of it's likely at this point going to come from social media and the people that you see looking a certain way, doing a certain thing. And you kind of grasp onto that, like, oh, well, I need to be doing that next, or that's the next step. When am I going to do that? And that leads to that, inability to ever be satisfied. In reframing your perspective around that, I think that might be the biggest thing holding people back. Like, hey, you're already winning. You're just not seeing it.
How do we get people to see it? How do we get people to work on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where being a data-driven person can help, where the more things that we can quantify, that saying, I never remember who actually said it first or in what context, but what gets measured gets managed, essentially. So that's where we can really be able to kind of put some numbers to paper, assess how shifts and changes and trends are occurring over time so that we can look at the actual proof. Like, let's see what the receipts say. Like, where are we based off of or compared to where we started? And again, it might be very obvious just at a smaller rate or magnitude. And that is something that might get, maybe deeper and out of my scope at some point to kind of say like, okay, if you can say, hey, yeah, I see the numbers are changing, but I'm still not okay with that. I'm not a therapist. So I'm not going to be somebody's try and play that role for them. But that does tend to help for most people, at least a little bit.
What are some of those data points? And I say data points almost loosely, meaning like could be like very physical data points of like a biomarker, or it could be more like metaphysical, more vague subjective data points. What sorts of things do you think are a little bit undervalued, underrated in the context of you know, tracking this stuff and paying, let's say just like loosely or anywhere from loosely paying attention to it to tracking down to a data point has helped clients feel more positive about what they're doing, how they're doing, and overall maybe more optimistic and quality of life and all those other endpoints that end up being good.
Yeah, I think, you know, the obvious ones when we think about data points are going to be like tracking scale trends and tracking calories and macros so you can see what those, you know, your choices are actually leading to. But I think getting more abstract or trying to quantify more abstract concepts can be really helpful there in terms of like, are you minimizing the deviations from your normal or intended plan or program? So for example, like I have people who really struggle with sweets sometimes. So we just quantify specifically like how many servings, quote unquote, of sweets are you having throughout a week? And that's not something that people typically, they may like a sugar content or carbs, but how many treats am I giving myself? And we see a change in that go from like 15 per week down to 5 or less. And if you're not looking at those things, you might think, oh, I'm still having sweets multiple times per week, but yeah, way less. Or same type of circumstances with, you know, just tracking number of meals out, you know, is that decreasing over time? So I think it's more kind of like the deviations from the habits and behaviors that I view as good or successful or right. And are you decreasing those over time? And those can be, you know, kind of endless skipped training sessions, so on and so forth.
Totally. I think
those can be really helpful.
Yeah. I think even just people tracking their workouts and seeing strength improve can be really nice. Strength is like a thing that you can't, yes, if your strength goes up over the next 6 months, I bet you've also built muscle and that's something you could see. But strength is something that you can get really proud of that doesn't have to do with the way you look. And I think that it can be nice to have things in conjunction with aesthetic pursuits like strength gain, performance improvements. And I also think biomarker, I'm not a blood work guru in the context of like, people got to get this crazy extensive blood work every 3 months. We got to look at every single, you know, super mega unique fringe biomarker. But I think we're talking about stacking wins and stuff like that. Like sometimes I'll be working with clients for 6 months and a lot of, I'm more trained, let's say, to see all this good stuff and to help other people see this good stuff. And they'll get blood work back. And I'm like, dude, you're healthy as shit. Like this is incredible. This is incredible stuff that you wouldn't have known otherwise. You don't feel your cholesterol going down. You can feel overall health improving, but I'm not the blood work guru guy. Everyone needs to get blood work every 2 seconds. But if you are, you know, in the mindset of I'm looking to improve my health or I'm currently on a plan or a program or something, like get some blood work done and get it done in 6 months while you're doing this, because you might be like, oh, my weight's only down 5 pounds. And it's like, all right, your LDL's down, whatever, 20 points. Your A1C's down 0.3 or whatever. And you're like, oh, those are mega powerful for my overall health and longevity and stuff like that, that just you can't really tell without doing blood work. So that is one that jumped to mind for me.
Yeah, and I think that can actually help with that whole concept that I was talking about with the biggest struggle of people like not achieving the rate or magnitude at which they think is meaningful. When we're talking about like some blood markers, like you could go from your absolute magnitude change could be relatively small, but that can take you out of like a pre-diabetic range to a healthy range. And that can help you start to see that, hey, marginal changes over time are where like true health transformations come from. So yeah, I mean, I think the more granular that you can get, obviously not everybody has the access or resources to that much data, but it can show you that small change is actually big change.
Yeah, definitely. Other ones, you know, it could be hours of sleep. It could be sleep. I know, like, I think that there's also, and I talked about this with my group actually recently, there is like what gets measured gets managed is absolutely true. But there's a dark side to everything, right? I mean, I'm sure you've experienced clients who track their steps to a point where it becomes a net negative mental health wise. Is tracking calories to a point where it becomes a mental health, yes, I'm managing this thing, but managing this thing is actually not super helpful right now. And so I think finding that balance of tracking the things, like what's the point of tracking something at all? The point of tracking something at all is to reinforce the behavior that you're trying to reinforce. You track your calories to reinforce maybe making more nutritious choices, eating less calories, eating more protein, eating more fiber, whatever you're tracking. And so trying to find data points that really matter to you that reinforce good habits. Like people are like, you know, I'll pick on the Oura Ring for a second because it was a recent study that just came out that, like, basically...
I knew it was coming. That was coming. With the sleep data?
Yeah, sleep data, totally. Like, it just came out that, like, people did, like, a four-question questionnaire of, like, how they felt subjectively, and it outperformed, like, the actual Oura Ring data in terms of subjective feelings of well-being, whatever. But, like, I wore an Oura Ring for a long time, learned some stuff. It was super cool, but, yeah, got to a point where it became a net negative mental health wise. I was like super stressed out going to bed. So do you find that too, where it's like, hey, we're looking for that sweet spot of tracking stuff that matters, that reinforces good behavior, but not so much that, you know, now you're stressing out about every single thing.
Yeah. Like, just like you said, it's something that the data points we're looking at should reinforce a behavior or influence future decisions that you're going to make differently. Right. So those decisions should end up being a net positive for us. So if they're not, if that influence ends up actually being negative and now you're more anxious, you're more worried, you're more unsure of what you're going to be doing, then it's doing more harm than it's good. And I've always had that stance, and that's why I bought my wife an Oura Ring, but I've never worn one. I've never worn a Whoop or anything that has a recovery score, because I've always felt that, you know, I mean, you wake up and you're like, do I have the energy today? Or you put the bar on your back and you do some warm-ups. Do you know if you've got that PR in you today? The whatever the data on your app tells you isn't going to tell you more clearly than your body is. So yeah, it should have a net positive outcome in terms of its influence.
You've been doing this for, I say, quite some time. We're both young-ish, but long enough to have seen things change, let's say. So like, we've been doing this long enough, over a decade, to see things change. So I'm thinking, what is something you feel like, I'm going to phrase it this way, it sounds like a little hyperbolic, but like a battle you've been fighting with your clients, not against them, but with them, a problem that you're helping them solve that feels, you know, relatively new, maybe the last two to four years of like, that's something that we've been faced more recently. And I don't want to pick a big one that maybe you were going to say, but just to pause and give you a second to think, is just the battle of misinformation. Is that isn't a thing I did. I felt like, as much in like my early career.
No, not that it wasn't there. Right. Like, everyone will bring up, like, oh, it was in the magazines. You had all these programs that people saw that were like, yeah, probably not actually the best idea, but they're going to look really flashy and whatnot. But yeah, when I was on the gym floor, maybe I was having the conversations of like, actually, no, you don't need to cut out all carbs, right? Like, actually, you don't need to do keto. But yeah, now with the prevalence of just, you know, swipe, 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 you can get 100 different polarizing messages and statements in a 30-second time period. It is a struggle. And I will tell you, it is one of the reasons I'm fairly, on a borderline burnout point with just social media in general and fighting this battle. Like I said, there's a lot of people like in our circle, quote unquote, that are doing a really good job putting really good stuff out there. But man, are there a lot more that are just like flooding the messaging. And it's hard. It is hard to fight. As someone who knows, I can't even imagine what it's like for somebody who's just like coming into this, like not really sure where to start, what's going on, what should I do? And then seeing everything all at once. So yeah, I mean, how do we not say misinformation is going to be the biggest struggle for people?
Yeah. Yeah. That's been a large one. I think we are, God, this is an optimistic point of view, just carrying on from our beginning optimism of that. I just think people are, so you're feeling a little bit burnt out on social media. I'm feeling a little bit burnt out on social media. And I think, I'll say this without it being self-deprecating. Like, my content's not doing as well anymore. And I think that there's a lot of reasons, but there's one of them is I bet you people are burnt out from that sort of information from people like you and me. And I'm, it's a double-edged sword, because this is part of you're in my business. That's really important. But like, I'm also very like, I'm happy if people are spending less time on social media. And I think we're on maybe the down curve from the average consumer is a little bit burnt out from all the information, and that sucks for our engagement, but it's probably good for most people to be like, yeah, I probably got to take a little bit of a break from this app. I got to probably unfollow some of, you know, the people that are just nonstop hammering some of this information that's confusing me. And so do you feel that way as well?
Yeah, I think that is true, and it is a net positive. And also it's part of the reason why it becomes so frustrating on our end as creators, because when we start to see that engagement go down and we start to think that, okay, that's what's going on, net positive. But then something else sparks that is, you know, one of those BS posts and you're like, really? That got 3 million views? So clearly it's still happening, and then it sparks up that anger again. You know, it's that vicious cycle. So yeah, I think in general, the people in our circle anyway, clearly, like, as my engagement's gone down to the people that have received the positive, the good, you know, unbiased messaging, I think have gotten the benefit from it. Now the challenge is just, and this is where the burnout comes from, how do you continue to reach more people without being that really polarizing, like, statement in your face that's pretty much going to be a bold-faced lie if you want to get that those million views.
Yeah, we don't need to open your can from the other day, dude. That was something. I think that, I mean, I, that it was a, I mean, I see, and for those of you guys, I don't mean to throw you on the spot here, but that your post the other day of you rocking in the chair with like a, or whatever, like got over,
Oh,
it's
that is
probably up
a,
to 2 million views, right? I mean, so.
it's a picture perfect, like portrayal of social media and how ridiculous and nonsensical it is, and how we always have to take a step back and remember who we're dealing with, what we're talking about here, because there's always going to be those that see it a different way, whether it be accidental or intentional, you know what I mean? But yeah, like, it's a clip of me rocking a stuffed animal, and half of the comments are saying that, like, I'm basically a bad parent because I decided to prop up my phone and film me rocking my child. And I'm like, you open your eyes, you realize that that's not the actual scenario that I was talking about in the video, right? But yeah, that's what the whole problem is with social media, is they take something at quote unquote face value, and it might not even be what the actual face value is because they didn't see it correctly, and they immediately have a reaction, a belief, a response. And once that is set in stone, it's hard to fight against that. And you know that that's the case when we're talking about these camps that are really, really solidified in stone, whether it be, you know, carnivore type people, the ones who are like, no, this is the way. It's not worth our time or energy to try and convince them otherwise. It's trying to get in front of the people who haven't been convinced yet.
Yeah. And
Oh
parenting
my goodness.
is as contentious a field slash topic as anything, if not more. I mean, it's up there with politics. Like, I knew immediately what was going to happen when I saw that post, by the way. I knew immediately because I just know what the algorithm does. I just know which people come out of the woodwork and feel certain ways. So I felt for you in that moment of like, and you even put on your stories, you were like, I've spent all day in this weird headspace. I've had those days. Absolutely true. I want to do a soft pivot to a more optimistic discussion here. But so I want to talk about I'm a new dad. You're on, how old is your daughter?
Going to be 9 months old in a
That's
week and a
awesome.
half.
It's awesome. It's awesome. She's beautiful, by the way. Adorable. Absolutely love her.
Yeah, so is Emerson.
Thank you. And I'm gonna say something, and then I'm gonna ask you to chew it up and spit it back out on how you feel about it. And so they say, you know, it's hard to, so there's this, it's like, having an overweight cardiologist is like, you know, people have an issue with that. They're like, oh, this person doesn't practice what they preach, or, you know, having a really fit person help people who have obesity. They're like, you don't know what it's like, right? I don't know what it's like. I've never had obesity. I have more favorable genetics than the average person who comes to see me, right? So I've never really, really been in your position. So how much is that an issue with my ability to help you? I think it is not 100% irrelevant. I think it's not. I think that if I could also have had that experience, it would make me a better coach. But it does not preclude me, exclude me. It does not exclude my ability to, like, there's, like you said, there's so many other factors about, like, being a people person, understanding when people need, you know, empathy and compassion, when they need a more direct communication, being there for somebody, being a hard worker, being available for somebody, having knowledge and education and being a good communicator. I mean, so many things. There is one thing of like, did you experience the thing I'm experiencing? It is not irrelevant, but has not stopped you nor I helping a lot of people with problems you and I maybe haven't faced. Now, I don't mean to assume what you have and have not faced, but I'm sure you've helped somebody with something you haven't experienced, which shows us that that's possible. However, since becoming a dad 4 months now, I feel a tiny bit like I've moved a tiny bit along the spectrum to saying, I get it a bit more
I
now.
didn't get it before.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's not that I didn't entirely get it, but I'm like, you know what? I would have said what I just said before having a kid, where I'm like, I know that there is a percentage of this pie chart of specific experience of this exact thing that would help me connect, you know, sympathy versus empathy. And so I really do. And again, I'm only 4 months in, right? And you're only 9 months in. And there's you've had clients that have kids that, you know, were toddlers and 5 and 10 and teenagers. And so there's so much we don't know. But like, I do feel a little bit like, yeah, that this experience is going to help me become a better coach for that clientele.
So I do agree with that. But as far as actionable takeaways and like what would change in terms of how I would address certain issues and recommendations that I would give to people, I actually don't see that altering all that much because the concepts are the same. The direction we need to move are the same. Everybody's just going to be, and because everybody's parenting experience is going to be different, their parenting styles are different, their children are going to be different. It's never going to look the exact same for each person anyway. So I have a greater appreciation for the struggle because I'm like, yeah, I have felt it now. And it's very similar to like, you know, if you've ever dieted down to like a really, really low level of body fat, you don't understand the pain and fatigue that you get from that unless you've been there, right? It's the same concept here of like sleep deprivation and just like constant requirement of attention, especially if you're at home with your child all day long. Like it's a different type of fatigue that you get it, but you don't get it until you get there. But again, we're looking at the habits and behaviors that we need to help people implement. They're always going to be the same. The how is just going to be different. So I don't know that me being a parent changes that all that much. And it's actually kind of funny. This week, I'm going to be starting with one of the other level 10 coaches, Coach Shelby, actually just had a baby this morning. And so I'm taking over one of her clients temporarily while she's on maternity leave. This client that I'm taking over actually became a new mom within the past year of teenagers, like first time mom now has multiple teenagers in her home. And I'm thinking about that, like, hey, I've technically been a parent longer than you have, but does that put me in a position to kind of like say, this is what's going to help you, this is what you should do? Absolutely not. You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't think that the actual coaching aspect will differ, but the appreciation 100% does. Like you said, it's like, I get it more now. Yeah. Truly.
That appreciation might throw you a bit more of a bone. That appreciation might come out in tone of voice.
It might like empathetic
in,
responses.
Yeah, it might come in tone of voice, might come in a communication style. I agree with you that like time management and how to save time in your workouts and how to save time in meal prepping and how to, you know, be more efficient with this. And yes, I think very similar things will come out of my mouth. I do feel it's, you know, that 1% tone difference of like, oh yeah. All right, I get it a little bit.
Yeah, so the client connection, like that relationship, yes. I feel like that certainly will 100% change because, yeah, you can actually empathize and you know, share something like, oh, you know what? I went through something similar. And whether or not you're actually giving them something actionable to take away, they probably feel a little bit more comforted to consult and be like, you know what? Because for whatever reason, Missouri loves company. You know what I mean? So if somebody else has struggled with it too, you feel better about it. So, yeah, I guess you're right. In that way, it changes coaching for sure.
What's changed for you in terms of what's changed? The list never ends. How your time management changed since having your daughter and maybe values changed, and how's it changed your life?
Yeah, I would say, I think my experience and yours as well, because, you know, I think we are slightly outliers in terms of parents that are with home and around the child 24/7, essentially, you know, like I can't even imagine the reality of, hey, I'm leaving for work at 6 a.m. I'm coming back at bedtime, and that be like my relationship with my daughter, just because that hasn't been my experience ever at all. You know what I mean? So it's very different in that regard because it's constant. It is 24/7, which I mean, gives me that appreciation too for those that, you know, are single moms, stay at home moms. I'm like, hey, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I know what you're going through with that as well. But yeah, I have since shifted because that is the case. And, you know, I take on basically half of the role because my wife works from home too, of like caregiver as well as working full time, that my personal endeavors when it comes to training and dieting have taken a back seat a little bit, or they've at least been dialed down in terms of training frequency, training intensity, total volume. Like I just do less, essentially. And I've looked for ways to simplify things. Like I'm not a chef, I can't cook. So my meal prep has always been very simple, very basic anyway, but now it's even simpler in terms of like buying pre-cooked stuff from Costco, or even, you know, using some of the like Hungry Root or home, like the delivery services where it's like, I don't need to go do anything now. So it's like simplify, 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 because most of my time and energy is going to, now she's this close to actually walking on her own. Like she'll stand up and take steps if you support her. So I'm like literally running around all day long for somebody else, not myself
Yeah,
anymore.
that's super exciting. That's so exciting. We have a friend down
Yeah,
the street.
it's wild.
Her daughter just started to walk, and so that's wild. I have a rule in our house that I love to cook, but it's no longer feasible to make a three component dish, each component needing my attention. So I have a rule, I only cook one component of the dish. And so if we're making like steak, potatoes, and broccoli, it's like I'll make the steak, but the potatoes and broccoli are from frozen in the oven, done. Or if I want to make my own potatoes, I want to make like air fried French fries or whatever. It's like, okay, we're doing the pre-made Costco sous vide this or something, or Kevin's or something. You know, I can't. That happened to me a couple times where I was like, I don't have the time, don't want to spend the time or energy to like do a three component dish. So we're cooking max one component of this dish, and the rest has got to be like plug and play.
Yeah, and like I said, I've always kind of been that way. If people, I mean, my friends anyway, that know that this has been my preference, like I like canned green beans, and I prefer them more than fresh because of the texture and whatnot. But like, yeah, I haven't deviated too far from that because that's basically what you're saying. Like, that's an easy way to complete a meal with a can opener and microwave that takes 35 seconds. You know what I mean? But so that I mean, I think I was in a unique position there that a lot of those recommendations that I give to clients anywhere is kind of like, hey, like I'm really doing this now, but I kind of was before anyway.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the big ROI habits. So whenever I have people on the pod, I think there's people that are like subject matter experts. You know, I'll have last podcast was Dr. Matthew Nagra, and I'm like, hey man, come on, let's talk plant-based dieting or, you know, whatever. Someone who's like, hey, you're a niche expert in this topic. And other times it's a coach. Sometimes it's a friend in another field. But when it's a coach, I really like the perspective of you're a boots on the ground guy of like, you're working with people. And so I want a lot of our discussions, you know, and obviously it has been, and it's been really good so far, but those, you know, you can tell on people's content. I mean, I can tell very quickly at this point, if I look at, if
Who's
I scroll
working
through
with
your
someone or
page,
not?
who's working with an individual and who is disconnected from that in some way. And you are absolutely somebody who's mega, mega plugged in. And the word that comes to mind is insightful. I find you insightful. And that insight only comes from actually working with a literal person. And so let's talk about, like, all right, we're a bunch of people listening that are going to be our, you know, prototypical clientele. What are some of the big ROI habits you recommend to people who want to get healthier but don't know where to start? And extra points for it being more boring. It doesn't need to, we don't need to wow them.
Yeah, I'll start with the boring ones because they tend to be the most effective ones anyway, right? So you've all probably heard this a million times, but if you're literally just starting out doing nothing, just moving your body more with more walking. Like there's recent, I guess, what, a couple of weeks ago, there was that, who was it? Dr. Jen, I believe, the podcast clip that went viral in terms of like the discussion of is walking exercise or not. Regardless of the answer, walk more. You know what I mean? Like that's the simplest, easiest, lowest hanging fruit. That's a good place to start. So as far as habits goes, if you end up walking more than you used to, you're off to a great start. The second one is, I've already said it basically because it's kind of been already how I have been really successful in consistency with nutrition because I don't like to cook. It's hasn't been a hobby of mine, and I don't have, probably because I don't have the skill set. I never really learned. If I did, I might enjoy it. But you know, my meal prepping is so basic and so simple when it comes to, you don't have to have these lavish recipes. You don't have to have things, you know, cooked out 7 days in advance and in all these individual meal prep containers ready to go that you're taking to work with you and your Flex, whatever that brand was of the like cooler bags and whatnot. Just prep some ingredients ahead of time, you know, prep some protein, make sure you have simple things on hand that you can then add to it, like the canned green beans. A lot of my meals are the basic, you know, foundational ingredients that can then be manipulated to make them different meals. So like chicken rice and a veggie, or that same chicken that was prepped, I can throw in a tortilla that's in my pantry and put a, you know, a different veggie in it. Now I've got a taco instead of a rice bowl. Things like that is a good way to start with your nutritional changes, is just prep individual ingredients so that you have things readily available on hand. And I think, you know, those two alone, because they kind of cover both ends of the spectrum, is like you're making some really good headway on both of the, you know, biggest and most impactful things with your movement and your dietary intake. But if we want to get a little bit more specific, and I think you'll appreciate this one because I can't remember his name, but I swear, you know how Instagram, it'll show you like liked by. I swear I've seen your name before on this guy's posts. He kind of, he's satirical and he plays on all of the financial advice gurus who, you know, on their podcasts come on and are basically like, what I do is I break my day up into 3 hours.
Yeah,
by the
foggy.
Time, you know, 3 p.m. comes around, I've lived 3 days and you've only lived one and compounded over time. Then he comes on and he's like, well, how about I live 300 days in 30 seconds? You know what I mean?
Yeah, he just goes crazy. Yeah.
I think he's hilarious. I
love it. Love him.
But that concept that some of those people, those financial gurus, you know, kind of that foundation that they lay, I think actually is really helpful in terms of time blocking. Like most people who don't know where to start also don't know where they're starting from. So if you actually like map out your day in terms of like, what am I doing? What are the things that I'm doing in the morning, mid-afternoon, evening? Like, when am I eating? When am I getting up? When am I going to work? Finding those gaps within your day that you actually have free time, or you have behaviors that are like, ooh, it'll be obvious. You'd be like, I shouldn't be doing that. Or there's like an entire week goes by and you said, I didn't do this and I should be. Identifying where those gaps are ahead of time by kind of like mapping out what your day looks like and time blocking, so to speak, I think is huge because it doesn't necessarily mean you need to change anything right away. You're just establishing awareness of like what's happening or what isn't. And that can open many, many doors.
I think, yeah, like doing some sort of an audit of where you're spending time,
exactly,
where what you're eating, you know, but just doing an audit of like you said, what's my starting point? What am I?
Yeah. That's a better word for it, audit, because when I say time block, I think I'm actually putting myself in my own mind of how I live my days now because of being on baby schedule. It's kind of like instead of a 24-hour day, it is every 3 hours you've gone through, wake up, diaper change, feeding, nap, wake up, diaper change, feeding, nap. So within each 3-hour block, you have 30 minutes to an hour potentially of productivity. What can I do at this point in the morning? What can I do at this point in the afternoon versus the evening? And so that's what I mean by time blocking. But yeah, the biggest one is the audit that, you know, thank you for
correcting. Got you. I definitely have seen, man, if I could, I was telling Jenna the other day of like, what was I doing with all my free time? You know, like I'm not saying I'm doing exactly what I was doing prior. I'm not. I'm just cracking up at like, like what was I doing with all this free time? Like after dinner, you know, or this free time, like midday when I have a break for a call, like what the hell was I doing? You know? Yeah. It's wild.
So you're more recent into that 4 months now. Can you think back and like put yourself in a day free baby and like feel what that was like?
Yeah.
My wife was asking me that and I'm like, I can't, like, I already am in this place where I'm like, I can't really experience that day again in my mind without there being the baby's waking up at whatever time and the baby's going down at whatever time. Like that's just his life now. But yeah, I agree. I'm kind of like, yesterday I was around, you know, naps, and I'm like, what would I have been doing now a year ago? And it's just weird. It's very weird. Time is looked at differently.
Totally.
Sure.
And I know I still feel I was sleeping so good. That's something I'll never forget. I told Jenna, like I had finally like not cracked my own sleep hygiene code, but the year before we had our daughter, so whatever, last year, let's say the whole year Jenna was pregnant, I was sleeping so good. I had like figured out just like a good routine and I just crack out. I mean, whatever, we're not, you know, we're dealing with all of the normal things now, but that is something that I do remember. Unfortunately, I look forward to forgetting it. Just, I'd rather ignorance is bliss. I'd rather just become the new norm, you know?
How old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay, so we're about the same age. I'm 32. Are you also, or have you also experienced major differences from, I'll say from the sleep deprivation mainly, but also probably now because we are sleep deprived in our almost mid-30s as opposed to mid-20s, from a just general recovery standpoint? And I don't necessarily mean from like a, you know, training progression and things like that, but even with, and it's going to sound odd, I mean, I've got some nagging injuries that have been consistent and present for 9 months now. And I'm like, I know it's because I'm not sleeping through the night and recovering fully. But even weird things where like I cut myself somehow the other day and I'm like, this would have scabbed over and healed in 3 days before. It's still an open wound a week later. I'm like, what is going on with my body that is not, you know, like finding itself at homeostasis again every night? It's just not.
Yeah, no, definitely. For sure. That's an interesting point. Just of the balance. I mean, most injuries, I know we're talking about most injuries are a case of load management, but this one side of that equation is the recovery side. So if that goes down and your training stays the same, you could be in a state of whatever, overtraining, under recovering, whatever. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm thinking of a nagging injury I have right now is a glute, just like this glute. I have some glute hamstring pain. Interesting. It's very possible that that's
it. Yeah, and I've even, you know, because I know those things too, and I'm like, okay, I'm pulling back. I'm reducing. I've reduced frequency. I've reduced volume of training as well. And I'm kind of just like, these things just still are nagging me throughout the day when I'm not even, you know, training them at all, essentially, you know, which could be part of the problem too. You know, you don't want to avoid completely, but yeah, it's just weird. I don't know if it's sleep or age is what I was getting at in terms of like, man, things are not bouncing. I'm not as elastic as I used to be.
That's true. I find it mostly on the psychological side of like, not to get dark, but like, I'm a very optimistic person. I'm like a very glass half full person. Like I'm very like a problem solver in like, I'll go very quickly to like, all right, so like, what can we do positively from here? But like that is taking more intention lately and it is less a default setting and I can default to the pessimism more quickly. And that is something Jenna and I both feel. And we're both sleep deprived. We look at each other and we're like, yeah, like we are less battery full, more pessimistic on average. And that not to circle back to our clients, like that sleep does a lot of things for you. Everything from like you will move more throughout the day because you have greater amount of NEAT and just like you have more energy to naturally subconsciously move around to like, you know, decrease ghrelin levels and you'll have less cravings, you'll be more satiated to workout performance gets better, all that stuff. But your like baseline level of optimism and positivity permeates through like all of the decisions that you make. Like you're just in a state of mind more likely to do something good for yourself when you've slept well. And that's something that I've felt where I'm like, I'm more like, yeah, like, I don't want to do that. You know, normally would have been like, hey, that's going to be really good for you. Like do that. So that's definitely one where I think of with our clients for sure.
Yeah, there's, and I think stress has the same effect just as much as sleep. But yeah, it's the way that I'm noticing it now is there's a delay or like a relay that doesn't flip until later when it comes to making a decision that I know will benefit me or make me feel better. It's like I will sit and do nothing for much longer and almost zone out now because I'm kind of just like in this zombie state, you know what I mean? And then for long, you know, that turns into the things like the zombie scrolling. You've gone a whole day without being as productive as you wanted to. And then you're like, oh, well, I'm even more behind. Whereas before, yeah, I would have just like cut that off right at the, you know, head and done something. Now it's, you're just slower to react, which, you know, that's a way that we've seen the research show sleep deprivation has a major impact on things like that too, but more metaphorically than literally.
Yep. Let's, these are two questions that I ask everybody and we'll close the podcast with this. I'm on dad duty 7 minutes. What is something that you do that isn't, oh my God, healthy influencer, you know, but you still do it because, you know, it's good for your soul or because fuck it, because you like it, you know, that somebody might look at it in isolation and be like, oh, that's not becoming of a health influencer.
Yeah. And I think this is more so opposing recommendations that I give to clients a lot with breaking associations with food behavior with an action or activity. Like if you go to the movies, I'm always eating popcorn to everything just without even thinking about it, right? There's the association with food. Every single night, once the baby goes down now and we put on a show or TV or a movie or something, I'm having a treat, whether it be a salty snack, and like I don't give a shit. Like I look forward to it all day long. And don't get me wrong, I'm at a point where I'm skilled enough to like fit it in and moderate it if I needed to and I wanted to hit specific macros. Like I've got it under control. But I intentionally say like, no, that is part of my day that is like euphoric almost as much as, you know, you shouldn't apply those things to food. It's the environment now that is just even more so, like it's been exponentiated in terms of like some relief, you know?
Yeah. I saw a tweet. It was like this little treat culture has got to stop. And then there was a reply to the tweet. It's like, sounds like somebody needs a little treat.
It's a treat. Like, yeah, right. Exactly. Like that. As adults, I think we forget that like a lot of our problems can be solved with a little nap and a little snack. You know what I mean? So like if you can have them, take them.
Yeah. Cool. And on the other side of it, well, what's something I phrase it usually, what's something a little bit more fringe that you do that you actually think is pretty meaningful? And I say just like outside of the lift weights, eat nutritious food, walk, you know, like what's something where you're like, actually, you know, maybe something that's a little bit more on the fringe that I do and I really appreciate in my life could be anything from mental health to physical health, quality of life could be anything.
Yeah, I think just taking breaks from things entirely. So, you know, I've been considering taking, like, deleting the Instagram app from my phone for a week or something so that I just, like, step away from it. The same way that I view it very productive to not, at least intentionally or, like, regimentedly exercise for a week, you know, like, take an active recovery week in between training blocks or what have you, like, pull away from it for some period of time. Same thing with, like, again, when I say this, I don't mean like don't eat healthy for a while, but like if you're tracking, take a week off, you know what I mean? And just like follow your habits and behaviors and just step away and take a break from all the things. There's a, I think it was one of those tweets or one of those, you know, text posts that I saw that was like everything tends to work a little bit better if you unplug it for a bit, including you. And I'm like, yeah, you can apply that to anything. Just, you know, press pause every once in a while.
I love that. I love the... Yeah, I agree. I think that that's awesome. I think having, yeah, some period of abstinence for certain things, it can be powerful.
Right, and not to say that you're going to stop doing things, because like if I take a break from tracking food, I'm still eating protein. I'm still eating fruit and veggies. Sure, you know, sure, if sure. I'm not working out, I'm still going to go walk and get steps in. But you know, taking a break from the monotony or the, you know, regimen of, you know, every single day, checking off all the boxes essentially.
Yep. Cool, man. Super fun chat. Let people know where they can find you and come to your page and post angry comments about you rocking a chair.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to yell at me for sitting with a goat and recording it, my Instagram is at Coach John Knoll. Like I said, I might be taking a little bit of a hiatus there because a lot of my content has been similar to yours where, like, you know, you call out some nonsense and kind of try and put some logic behind it. And that's tough to do. So who knows? We might switch it up a little bit and throw in a little bit more of just like my own personal life and make social media a little bit more social again, as opposed to needing it to be all business all the time, you know, take a break a little bit, like I said, but yeah, this Instagram is my main social media outlet at Coach John Knoll.
Cool. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time, John.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Get back to dad duty.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.